met travelers, and welcome to the Kinky Tavern. Pull up a stool. What do you have to drink? Here, we're going to talk about different aspects of kink, leather, the BDSM community, relationships within it, and so much more. All opinions voiced in this podcast are just that, opinions, and they should not be taken as fact or medical advice. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy.
If you would like to stay in the loop and connect with us beyond the podcast, be sure to follow us on our social media.
Yes, we love engaging with our community and sharing a bit more about us and our lives and having some delightful conversations.
You can also make any suggestions of topics or things you think we should do with our podcast through these links or through our Discord, which is in the link tree. The link tree is always in the description below, and you can also find it at linktr.ee/thekinkytavern.
Yes, we also have a Patreon. It cannot be found by searching Patreon. You have to go through the link. So patreon.com/thekinkytavern. We also have that link in our link tree, so you can follow us there.
We have an Instagram, The Kinky Tavern Podcast. Our old one, The Kinky Tavern, was shut down, so if you were following it and you'd like to stay up to date, go ahead and follow our new one, The Kinky Tavern Podcast.
Yes, and I also run our Twitter/X at The Kinky Tavern.
And our FetLife is also at The Kinky Tavern. I also have a TikTok at MixDizzySoul. That is at MXDIZZYSOUL. I also have a Facebook under M/Dizzy, EM/DIZZY. And my FetLife is MDizzy without the space.
Yes, and you can also follow me on TikTok. Yes, I do have a TikTok. I may be posting there soon. I don't know. I'm not sure yet. But it is pup_Merlin_Wrecker. pup_MERLIN_RECKR. I also have a Facebook. That is Marquis Wrecker. MARQUISREKKR. And I also have a FetLife, which is the same as my TikTok, pup_Merlin_Wrecker.
We have a new collaborator coming to the podcast, Master Devin Stone. Devin is an author, educator, and Jedi consultant. Jedi stands for Justice, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. He has published 4 books, taught more than 200 classes, and has been featured or interviewed on more than 10 podcasts. He's also been a keynote speaker for Leather Rain and Leather Leadership Conference. If you want to book Devin as an educator, there are currently 32 classes available on his website where you can also find all of the different ways to interact with Devin, donate to him, attend his classes, and purchase his books, handouts, merch, and so much more. Go to devinstone.com/support. That's devinstone.com/support.
You can also find him on Patreon at patreon.com/devinstone, where you can see some behind-the-scenes organization for things like travel, cons, and events, as well as recaps of his social media challenges at the end of every month. You can also receive free tickets to Devin Stone events and gain access to his fabulous Discord, where you can ask Devin anything 24/7 in the Q&A channel, and receive updates on presenter applications, where there are consistently 20 to 30 live applications up at any given time.
Devin also founded Pragmatically Kinking. Since 2013, Pragmatically Kinking, or PK, has been offering discussions, classes, and panels focusing on the practical and emotional side of the BDSM, kink, leather, non-monogamy lifestyle. In 10 years, PK has held more than 400 educational and supportive events.
In 2021, the PK team developed Thrive Conference. Its aim is to center neurodivergence and mental health in kink and the leather community. Thrive is held every year in April, and the free conference sees registration from over 1,000 people every year and offers over 30 sessions.
Both PK and Thrive share the call to support new educators, marginalized communities, and create affirming spaces for everyone. You can find information about Pragmatically Kinking and Thrive through FetLife at Pragmatic Kink, and registration is through ThriveVirtualCon.com. I will also include all of these links in the description below. We'd like to thank our patrons, the regulars of the Kinky Tavern, Dopetastic Q, and the lovely Lady Katarina.
And we'd also like to thank our customers on our Patreon, Chris Canbread, Moon Goddess, and Sir Quill. The topics within this podcast are explicit. Listeners should be 18 and up only. Listener discretion is advised.
Trigger warning. Today's episode, by the nature of its topic, will be covering some more graphic content. If you're not in a place to handle this kind of discussion right now, please take care of yourself and join us for our next episode. If you are experiencing a mental health emergency, please call 911. If you need help or assistance with your struggles in trauma or mental health, please don't hesitate to reach out to the mental health hotline at 866-903-3787 or visit mentalhealthhotline.org for access to more free, confidential mental health hotlines and chats.
Hi, I'm Mix Dizzy.
And I'm Marky Popper.
And today we're going to be jumping on the Rainbow Road once again.
It's another Reddit rainbow.
So, from the subreddit BDSM Advice, how to turn someone away politely when vetting. Okay, so this might sound superficial. I'm really sorry if it does. But chemistry and attraction are important. Is there any polite way to turn someone away after the first online picture swap? It feels awful to turn someone down right after seeing their picture. I don't feel continuing the conversation and then backing out for some other fake reason is the way, but it just feels mean to say it's because there is an attraction and I don't know how to handle it.
I mean, it may sound mean, but like if you're genuinely not attracted to the person, then I don't see why you shouldn't just say that. That's happened to me a few times that I've messaged people and they were like, oh, you're not my type, or I'm not into beards. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
You just gotta, if that happens, it sucks, but you just gotta be like, okay, and move on.
Yeah, and I mean, if someone's appearance is likely to be like a deal breaker for you, essentially, then I would say to be pretty upfront about that and ask pretty early on in the conversation to have pics so that you don't get kind of interested and attached to one another before immediate rejection.
No, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm weird, but like I always ask for like basic age, height, weight, or build, and then ask for pics, whether it's a Facebook or face pic or not. And then I always exchange the same information just so we both know like what we generally look like, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that is more common, I feel like, in the demographics within which you are searching.
Yeah.
Because I sure as hell am not about to tell someone my weight.
Yeah.
Someone asks me that, it's an immediate nope, personally.
If someone asks you that, you should give them like a ticket. You know, like pull tickets you get at the DMV.
Take a number.
Sorry, that was bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think regardless of why, if you are wanting to at some point during vetting or, you know, that kind of pre-dating, pre-play, pre-negotiation conversation, getting to know one another thing, if during that time or any time in a relationship, honestly, or dynamic or play-ship, you have the right to say, I'm not feeling this anymore. I'm done. Thank you. Goodbye.
Yeah.
You have that right at any time. It might be awkward. You might piss someone off. I feel like even if you try your darndest to do everything right, quote unquote, if you're gonna follow your own heart, which you need to do, then you're gonna hurt people, piss people off. It happens. If you're a people pleaser, you'll just hurt your own heart and then eventually the other people. Anything else on that?
Nope.
Okay. Another one from the BDSM advice subreddit. Issue with switching. Since we just had our switches panel last week, I thought this would be a really good one. I am a switch and I've been noticing lately that a fair number of people, both doms and subs, are not interested in switches. I was talking to a dom recently for about a week online. Seemed very compatible. Then, when the topic of other fantasies came up, I mentioned that mine involved doming. Immediately ghosted. I've also talked to subs who said they would never let someone who had subbed before be their dom. I guess I'm trying to understand the mindset here. I tend to trust switches more because they have experienced both sides. What is your perspective on this? Is this common or am I just unlucky? Should I lie and say I'm just a sub or a dom, depending on who I'm talking to? That doesn't feel right to me. But people having switches as a hard limit doesn't seem right either. Edit, I should clarify, when I say lie, I don't mean to deceive someone maliciously, just to play into a possible fantasy of someone who only likes to play one side.
If it were me, I would just call yourself a switch. I don't like the whole gatekeeping thing that doms and subs like to do, saying there are no switches or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or they won't play with
someone because they've done subbing as a dom, or that just doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's that idea that like you are less of a dom or less of a sub or less of each because you are a switch. And that's just wholly untrue.
That's not even how it started.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you go and look back at, I hate to say this, but like the old guard ways, like you were supposed to start as a sub, as a bottom, and work your way up to being a dom.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and like not every place was like that, but like that was the general consensus. You had to earn your right to be a dom.
Yeah.
Top, whatever. Which is not the case now. You can just do whatever you want now.
And that wasn't the case in every single place.
No, yeah.
Every single club. But yeah, I mean, that was allegedly a thing back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of wild that people are so vehemently against switches when that was kind of how things started. yeah, especially because I know some people that would probably tout Old Guard and they don't agree with switches existing. Anyway, yeah, I would say lying is no good. It doesn't matter if it's just for play. I mean, that's deceiving and that's just not, just don't do it. There's no reason. I mean, like your only reason is to get more people to consent to you. But if you are deceiving them in any way, it's really not informed consent. So it is unfortunate that there's that view of switches and it sucks that we have to, you know, deal with that. Like as a demisexual person, I don't really want to play, have sex with, date someone who feels that way about switches. But I know that if you're just looking for a hookup or a quick scene, it may not matter to you someone's values. So I don't know. I guess I'm not really the greatest person to ask this. Number three in the sex education subreddit, condom question. Once I'm done using a condom, can I take it off and put on a new one? I'm worried about the sperm sticking to my shaft. I thought this was a really good one because it's a simple and like easy to answer question. And it just kind of is one of those things that highlights how little people learn in sex education. So yeah, if you come in your condom and you take it off and put on a new one, there might be some stuff stuck to your shaft. But typically, if you take off your condom correctly, the cum should be in the reservoir at the tip.
The majority of it, yeah.
And I wouldn't think that would the semen or sperm, the semen, not sperm, would the semen sticking to the shaft with the new condom on cause any trouble, you think? I don't have this anatomy, sorry.
I guess it depends on how much, but it shouldn't. I mean, if there's enough, it could, like, as you roll on the new one, it could, like, get to the base, and then that could get on the condom that you just put on, so.
Oh, like on the outside part.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But, like, you can always just kind of wipe off beforehand and put on the new
one. Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be a problem, but it just depends.
Yeah, cool. Number four from the subreddit Sex Tips, liking anal. Are there folks in the world that really like anal to the point of preferring it? Curious, because I've only ever heard the voices and stories of people who either didn't like it or did it for the novelty. And I'm just really curious if people are like really into it and it's their go-to, or if it's mostly a novelty for people. If you do really like it and it's your go-to, what is it about it that makes it so? And are you just not at all fazed by the, how do you say, fecal logistics? Thanks. I thought this was a good one. It's another one of those, like, kind of, to me, innocent sounding. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't want it to sound mean or anything, like, you know, but just a little bit of naivety. And it's kind of, I don't know, funny.
Yeah. I mean, some people are really into anal and they prefer it. Some people can't do it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's because of trauma or they don't like the idea of it. It's all really up to preference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there are some vulva-having people that do prefer anal over vaginal sex. Some can't have vaginal sex, maybe, for one reason or another, or just don't like it, or prefer anal. And with AMAB individuals, if they want to bottom, that's one of few options. So yeah, I would think that they would prefer anal sex. You know, I definitely think there are people that prefer anal. Mm-hmm. And as far as what people like about it, I mean, it's stimulating. It is a organ that has stimulating, it has nerves to stimulate.
It's an erogenous.
It is an erogenous zone. And if you can relax and you're clean and stuff, and I don't mean clean like the colloquial use of not having any positive STI results, but clean like, you know, you cleaned your booty. Mm-hmm. That's one of my things is like, if I'm not ready, if I have not prepped and it starts happening, I worry. And so it's not as enjoyable. But yeah, different things can make it more enjoyable than others. All right. From the subreddit, gay BDSM community. Would you sub for an inexperienced dom? To any subs/switches on here, would you consider subbing for a dom with little to no experience? I'm 23 male and looking to start exploring my dominant side. However, I'm a virgin, shy, and have no experience. Would this be a major turnoff for you? Would you strongly prefer a dominant who is experienced and confident? I just can't see anyone wanting to submit to me. I can't see anyone wanting to submit to someone like me. And if this is the case, I'm not going to be able to get the experience since I have no experience. And this is essentially a catch-22. Should I just pretend I'm confident, give up, or take a submissive role, even though I don't want that? I'm starting to feel like I'm SOL and should stop trying.
There are people out there who will play with inexperienced doms.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you can find someone who would be willing to mentor you in the community.
That's a good route to go, yeah.
To give you that experience. I mean, always do your research and learn more about what it is you want to do and how the best way you can go about doing it safely. That's always a good way to start. I prefer to learn in person from someone. Mm-hmm. So I know that, like, who's well vetted and they know what they're doing. I learn better that way. Not everybody does, but I feel like that's like a really good way to get your experience in.
Yeah. I mean, if that's an option for you, I think that's a good way to do so. Like having a mentor and being able to do in person, both like logistical, like lecture type learning and hands-on type learning and discussion type learning. I think that is all extremely valuable. But I think like with this post, I would hearken back to in our last episode when we talked about wanting a partner, wanting to find a partner, wanting to find a dom or a sub or whatever, and it just being something that if you don't focus on that, because if you're focusing on that, you're trying to control other people's behavior, and you just can't do that. You can't control other people's behavior in that way. So you got to wait. And while you're waiting, you can start learning. You can start becoming the type of person that the type of person you want would choose.
Yeah. I mean, it always helps to learn.
Yeah.
Whether that's through someone else or virtually or reading books. It doesn't hurt.
And please vet your educators and the information that they're giving you. And I know that can be difficult, especially as a newbie. I wouldn't say necessarily to trust the dungeon 100%, but typically the educators that are teaching at dungeons are vettable. You might ask like whoever's running the event, like, oh, where did you find these people? Where have they taught? Or even talk to the teachers, the presenters afterwards, and ask where they've taught and what kinds of classes they teach and stuff like that. And it doesn't always necessarily come down to where they've taught or necessarily their years of experience, but also just how much research and experience they've packed into that time.
Yeah.
Learning and experience they've packed into that time. And so it's, you know, one person's 8 years could be very casual and very like maybe level 201 now. We're like confidently level 201. Whereas like another person's 6 years could be, you know, they're in the most extreme levels of kink.
Yeah. Another thing I would recommend is to have multiple sources when you're doing your research.
Definitely.
It doesn't hurt to take the basically the same class from 3 or 4 different people.
Or even the same class over and over from one person. Shout out Devin Stone.
True. but that each person's going to have a unique experience and how they learned and all that. So even though they're going to be covering pretty much the same subject, if you're taking the same class, same types of classes, there's going to be new information in there.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the person who's teaching it, because the way they learned is going to be different from how somebody else learned.
Yeah. And like, even like I said, with taking multiple of the same class from the same presenter, oftentimes the audience, the discussion that's happening in the chat, the, you know, a lot of times the presenters will talk to the class, the attendees beforehand, and ask what they'd like to see out of this class. And so it can change drastically just based on a lot of factors. Even if it's the same exact class material brought in, the presenter being in different headspaces, being in different times of their life, having different events happen. Also with the attendees, same exact thing. And like where the discussion leads can change a class entirely. But yeah, I think that if you are inexperienced, there are going to be people who are willing to play with you. Mm-hmm. There are going to be people who are willing to date you. I don't think that should be someone's focus. I think that if you are coming into the community, you need to, and this is even if you're not in the community, like in the vanilla world, I don't think that focusing on finding a partner is healthy, because that is focusing on something you can't control. You can't control when you will meet the right person who also agrees that you're the right person and is willing to continue a relationship with you in a consensual manner. That is all a lot of things that you can't control. And so work on what you can control: learning, experience, bettering yourself, growth, development, etc. All right, this one comes from the subreddit Real Sex Advice. My husband has a pee fetish. Am I being unreasonable? So my husband, 39 male, and I, 39 female, have been together for 18 plus years. He's a wonderful husband, as in loyal, caring, and supportive. He's worked to support our family of 5 while I've been a stay-at-home mom most of the marriage/relationship. I just started working again recently. So all in all, we're pretty happy and I can't complain. Except one thing. He has a pee fetish. Though I don't understand it because it's not my thing, I'm very understanding of it and even open to it. I've reluctantly participated with him a few times. But I've told him many times I'm just not comfortable with it. And he still tries to guilt trip me at times, like saying things such as marriage is give and take. I do for you, you do for me. I do other things for him though, like scratch his back every single night before bed. Think of him when I'm out and buy his favorite drink or snack. Little things like that, that he hardly ever does for me. Though he's always taking good care of me, he lacks in the area of romance, so to speak. He doesn't buy me flowers or even remember my birthday most years unless reminded by someone else. And though gifts aren't anything important to me, a kind gesture every now and then would be nice. I've even expressed I wish he would just do little things more, like text me from work just to let me know he's thinking of me. There's just things in our relationship I wish were different, and I don't think it's fair when he acts like I should just do what he wants sexually and says things like it's give and take. Yet he still has yet to meet my needs in other aspects of the relationship. Also, he watches a lot of porn related to his fetish, and I've expressed my concerns with that too. It makes me shy away from the idea even more because I feel like now not only am I being asked to do something that I'm not very comfortable doing, but also I feel like I have to compete with these porn stars with all these cosmetic procedures that I just can't compete against with my average body. And then the whole not being able to perform as well as he sees these porn stars perform, but he doesn't understand, or he just doesn't care because he continues to watch the porn, and that's definitely not helping. Am I being unreasonable? How should I address the situation? Because I do want to please him, but I also want to make sure my pleasures inside and outside the bedroom aren't being put on the back burner. Side note, we do still have a pretty consistent sex life 2 to 3 times a week, considering we've been together nearly 20 years. So it's not like I'm just not giving him any at all.
Hmm.
That was a lot.
Yeah. Sounds like there's a few problems there.
Mm-hmm.
But if the water sports thing is not your thing, then that's not your thing.
Right.
I mean, you shouldn't be forced into doing it. That's not okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this a little bit earlier. Maybe it was in the last episode. There are going to be times that maybe your kinks don't match up exactly with your partner's kinks, and that's okay. You can find ways to get your needs met elsewhere, whether that be with a professional or with someone you met at the kink dungeon or whatever, whether that also be platonic, romantic, you know, no relationship at all, just play. Or sometimes if you are a monogamous couple that doesn't want to open up, that means compromising on things.
Yeah.
But you should never, ever pressure someone into consenting to something, no matter how necessary and important it feels for you, because that is coercive consent and that is not okay.
Yeah.
And with the porn thing, I mean, I think we've talked before about how, yes, typically it's binary. Men watching porn can affect the way their wives feel about themselves. However, that's also something I feel like personally in my life and my relationship with my values, that is something I feel like is on me to address within myself, while also on record to be cognizant and, you know, not maybe if he knows something upsets me, not do it in front of me or, you know, not do it at all. Number 7, how to do proper aftercare for misogyny kinks in the BDSM community subreddit. So I'm a trans woman that is very into misogyny as a form of degradation kink. My long distance boyfriend and I are planning to do an ERP, erotic roleplay, in celebration of International Women's Day with this kink. So what is the proper way to do aftercare with this? Edit, we had a great time together. So we're late to actually answer this, but it's fun to talk about. So with misogyny being like a psychological kink, a degradation kink, I think just like any other degradation or humiliation kink, that especially those that can be related to trauma, I think you should tread lightly. I think you should do a lot of negotiation, but that's not what the question was. The question was aftercare. So for aftercare, I mean, it's definitely important, I think, to bring the person back to a state of believing the bottom, coming back to a state of believing and understanding that the things that you said were not true.
Yeah, a lot of reassurance.
Yes.
And support, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Just basically saying that was all role play. I didn't mean any of that. And kind of, like you said, getting them back to normalcy, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, making sure that they know that's not really real. Because sometimes it can feel like it is, especially right afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a lot of people, that kind of reassurance and talking them back down to baseline headspace is really important. For others, it could just be cuddles. For others, it could be sex. For others, it could be a cigarette and a talk. Like it just kind of depends, of course. But I think that just making sure that you're able to get back to a space, both of you, all of you, however many you are able to get back to a space in which you are functioning, you are okay, you are back to baseline.
Yeah.
And especially with psychological kinks, I think staying in contact afterwards is, for a few days at least, is important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, always be sure to do check-ins.
Or at least talk about them. Some people aren't willing to do that. And personally, if I'm not willing to check in with you after a couple of days, I'm not willing to play with you that way. But I know there are people that do all kinds of types of play that might need check-ins days after, and they just don't do check-ins. This is just pickup play for them. And that is valid, but they should talk about maybe in the aftercare negotiation, who's going to take that over if it needs to happen. Number 8. This is in the BDSM community subreddit, Becoming Disillusioned. I don't even know if this is really the most appropriate place to post this, but I'm hoping some in this community will be able to empathize and maybe even have shared my experience. Why is it so fucking hard to find what you're looking for? To find what you know deeply is right for you? That specific feeling of rightness and feeling like you finally come home. I have been looking for the right dominant for me for most of my adult life. I am now late 30s. Of course, life gets in the way. It ebbs and flows, and priorities change. I've met and been involved with lots of people in kink world, and I've had lots of great experiences, lots of rubbish ones. Hell, I've even been married. But none of it has ever felt quite right. And I'm so tired and disillusioned, and my God, frustrated with how elusive he has been. I know in my bones, I feel it deeply that he is out there. I just can't seem to find him, or him me. I feel like it's never going to happen, and I've started to mull over the idea that maybe it's just not for me in this lifetime. He's gotten lost. I know that people say stop looking, it will find you, but I've lived with this constant awareness simmering under the surface for years and years. It never switches off. It's always there. How do you let go of that when it's so ingrained? Anyway, thanks for reading my moans, you lovely kinky people.
I feel that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, not like for a partner necessarily, but like for the community itself.
Mm-hmm.
Just because there's been a lot of upset in the community in my experience. And it's hard to find the people, a good community that'll be there for you
mm-hmm.
and provide you what you need. And it can be hard to find that sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. But I do think it's one of those things that it's part making good choices about it and good choices about your perspective and part luck.
Yeah. As far as finding a partner, like, it's really hard to find a partner.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. I mean, I got lucky when I found them because, I mean, I don't know if I would have found anybody else that was good. I'm sorry, that sounds bad.
Oh, thank you. You're so romantic.
Yeah, I mean, the whole, like, stop looking, it'll come to you. I mean, that's the best advice I can give, really.
I mean, and if that's not working for you, then make it happen.
Yeah.
I know that there are some people who will, like, put out an ad and an application and make people come and apply, and then they will select someone and be like, okay, this is it. This is the contract. This is the role you're filling. Let's talk, you know, they negotiated, you know, but they kind of just go out and take it.
Yeah.
Like that, it's theirs. So, I mean, of course, it does still require the consent of other people. So it's one of those things that you can't control, and it can become unhealthy to obsess over it. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's options for you out there. Some of them you either wait and let them happen. I mean, you pretty much have to do that anyway, even if you're being proactive about it. By putting up an ad or posting somewhere or joining a dating website or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's still going to take time to find someone.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you do find someone, they may not be the right match for you.
Right.
So it's going to take time. It's hard to find the right person.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep, yep. This is in the BDSM community subreddit. How much control can be handed over? Is there any golden rule when it comes to how much control a submissive can offer to their dom? I love the fantasy of the dominant being in absolute control of the submissive, but would there always have to be practical limits to that? I guess another way of asking this, does the BDSM community ever support a submissive being an actual sex slave 24/7 to their dominant without the possibility of rejecting sexual advances, or does there need to be a safe word? Good question.
I mean, yes and no. It would all depend on your negotiation and what you want out of the relationship or your dynamic or whatever you have going on. I would say that the community would fully support that if that's what you want and everything's consented to.
There are people in the community who won't. I know people who are in very, very healthy 24/7 relationships that are very looked down upon because of the amount of control.
Mm-hmm. No,
because of the amount of authority transfer. So there, you know, there's always going to be people. You can't make everybody happy. That's just not possible. There's always going to be people, especially with the more quote unquote extreme sides of kink and BDSM, which this is, that are going to have a problem with what you're doing. But if it's something that you can do in a safer and healthier way, and it's consensual all around, and you enjoy it, and it fulfills you, then fuck all the other haters. Fuck them all. Who cares?
This does exist, and it is out there.
Yes.
And if it's something you want, then there's no reason why you shouldn't pursue it.
I will say, if you are on the submissive side looking for someone to control every little minute detail of your life, there are people out there like that, dominants, who want to do that, but it is rare. And like we've kind of said, on top of that, you kind of have to be compatible in other ways. It can be difficult to find partners who are compatible with you in all the ways that are important to you within the kink community, because you're adding with each kink, with each little factor, you are adding something that narrows you down, narrows your pool down.
Yeah. It can be hard to find, but it is out there. It does exist. It would take a lot to find that person, obviously. But if you put in the work on yourself and like actively find trying to find someone, you'll probably find someone out there. It may not be 100% what you're looking for, but it'll probably be pretty close if you're looking.
Well, and also realize there is a difference between fantasy and reality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can fantasize about certain things all day long. That doesn't mean that those are all your needs. You will have needs in a dynamic. Fantasy is not equate to needs. I see that happen far too often, where this someone will have an idea, this ideal, this fantasy in their head of what a dom is supposed to be, or what a sub is supposed to be, or what a slave is supposed to be, or what a daddy is supposed to be, and then expect that and project that onto the person they get into a dynamic with. And it can be very unhealthy and very heartbreaking for both sides.
Yeah. That's why negotiation and communication is very important, especially when you're looking for something like this.
Yeah, agreed.
Everything needs to be laid out and like on the table about what you want and need and mm-hmm. what your other partner wants and needs. And you need to find a way to make it cohesive and to where you both get what you want.
Yeah. All right. Next question. Last question. This is from the BDSM community subreddit once again. Is wearing a onesie in public okay? I have a onesie that I would like to wear as a top with some leggings or skirts. Is this acceptable or is it showing your kink in public? Where is the line drawn? What do you think, Daddy?
I think that's perfectly fine. As long as you're not like, I mean, if you're just wearing the onesie to wear the onesie because you like it, I don't see any problem with that.
Yeah.
Now, if you're walking around with like a bottle or a binky and all that, I think that's a little much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think there's body suits that exist. I just recently bought a jumpsuit that it's not a onesie, but it's shorts and a tank top, but it's one piece together. Like, that is a normal clothing item for people, body suits and stuff like that. So it's not out of the realm of possibility for someone to have an item of clothing that is not purposely for DDLG or ABDL or CGL or whatever that is patterned like that. However, I would stay away from the things maybe that say like, I hurt daddy or daddy's little slut or mommy's boy or maybe like the onesies that have like the bottles and the teddy bears and stuff like that on it. Like, use your discretion to determine what you feel like might be appropriate and what might be questionable as far as exposing other people to your kink.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, if you're just wearing it to wear it because you enjoy it, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
But if you're adding other things into it.
Yeah. I think wearing a onesie is fine. I think it's.
Yeah.
Close enough to normal fashion that you probably won't get much questioning. And alt fashion is pretty common nowadays. And if anyone asks, just tell them to fuck off. I don't know. No, don't get hurt. Please don't get hurt. If you do something that I said to do and you get hurt, I take no liability and I'm really sorry. Wait, my lawyer said I can't say I'm sorry. Okay. Now, Daddy, would you please lead us out with a Reddit Rainbow Daddy joke?
Yes. So, today I fucked up by accidentally cheating on my partner at a BDSM convention with a person who was wearing the same leather mask. Whoops. Wrong sub.
So bad. So bad. So many layers of bad. 50 shades of bad in the same joke.